Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Khomotso Mopalami is head of product solutions and business at South African Board for People Practices. Khomotso, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Aubrey, and good evening to the listeners. Thank you for having me in your show.
Much appreciated, Khomotso. Tell me about HR, human resources practitioners, the practice itself. What is its fundamental mandate in the business world?
Okay, first and foremost, as SABPP, we are the professional body for HR and quality assurance. We also accredit universities for their HR curriculum. So we are playing a critical role in this changing world of work in terms of human resources, because we know that there are those jobs that are very critical in this new world of work. And HR is one of them, whereby we need to ensure that the practices are aligned and whatever that our practitioners are doing, they are standardized so that they can measure what they are doing and then they can play that supportive role in their different organizations. Yeah.
And what are people who work for companies where your members, what should they be expecting to get from them? You know, and my question is, I know it sounds a bit weird. So I go to university, I study to become an HR person, a human resource practitioner, and I get a job, right? Mm. What is the mentality, the mindset that I should have towards the people that work in the company that I'm employed in as a HR practitioner?
Okay. You need to ensure that those people understand exactly what their roles are, and you need to be there to support them, and they need to know what are the new trends, what is happening. And for them to understand that, it is the critical role that you as the HR practitioner, you need to be playing. For example, now you've just mentioned that we are now talking about the world of work post the pandemic. We've seen everything changing from March 2020. In fact, those changes have long been predicted. However, March 2020 came and the world of work suddenly changed, where suddenly people were going to work every morning, they were stuck in traffic and all those things. But now we see that change from full-time employment to blended workforce. And the risk...
What does that mean, blended workforce? What does that mean?
We are in the hybrid mode now recently. You know, the blended work is whereby, like now we know that during the hard lockdown, everybody was home. No one was allowed
to
their workplaces. Yeah. And now people have gone back to their offices and some are still working from home, working online, you know, because as the HR professional body, we say we should be online and in touch. We should embrace technology and to position HR also in this digital era, whereby we say the employers should not be afraid. People should be allowed to work from home. This blended work mode should be embraced. So that's what it means. And there are certain things that employees and employers need to understand. They shouldn't be afraid. Yes, this comes with the challenges. However, we need to know exactly how to deal with such challenges. And that's what the employees need to understand.
You spoke about the fact that there were certain trends that had been predicted prior to, let's say, the 20th of March 2020. And I'm talking about that seminal moment of the coming down of the lockdown curtain, as it were, Khomotso. What were some of those predictions? What did What was understood about the changes that were coming into the workplace? You spoke briefly about technology and the embracing of technology by HR practitioners, and that I imagine was a big part of what would have been predicted, given the the advances in technology. But what were some of the trends that perhaps might not be as obvious to you and to my listeners that were predicted prior to COVID-19?
Yeah, Aubrey, the main thing is about the skills, whereby it was predicted that some of the existing skills won't be needed 2020 and beyond. And that's exactly what we are seeing now. For example, the new skills that are needed in the workplace now, it's skills such as problem-solving skills, those soft skills, empathy and compassion, creative and innovative thinking, authenticity and vulnerability, collaboration and teamwork. Those are some of the skills that are needed because we say, and we are talking about 2020 now, when you look at organizations such as the World Economic Forum, there are also the new trends that they communicated for 2022. And now we are nearing the end of 2022. And the question is, what are the other new skills? Because it's predicted that in the next years to come, the next few years to come, the skills that are in existence now, they will no longer be needed. So it is the responsibility of HR to ensure that we train and we inform the employers that they need to be ready. They need to have that insight in terms of leveraging in the opportunities, learning from the past, either their mistakes or what, and to know that what is it that they need to bring into the organizations in terms of the new skills. So we also, as we talk about the skills, we are also talking about the forces that are shaping the future of work. So it is all about reskilling and upskilling, to bring in the relevant skills in the workplace.
And how have HR practitioners taken to this new demand by the new environment? In other words, the need to help people upskill themselves. And I say this, Khomotso, within the context of the fact that we've just heard, at least from Statistics South Africa, that 66.5% of South African youth are unemployed. Yeah. So they're not looking for a chance to upskill themselves in the workplace. They're just looking for a job at this point.
Yeah, that's a problem, Aubrey.
Yeah.
They need to also look at upskilling themselves and also multi-skilling. Because I think, Aubrey, you might be aware that now, even within these new trends that we are observing now, most of the people, they are no longer even looking into the full-time job. They want to do something on the side, either they are flexible or contingent or freelancing, all those things. So it is very, very critical that someone needs to look at this at a different lens, to say, how do I upskill myself? How do I incorporate the new skill? How do I become multi-skilled? So there's a need for that reskilling revolution for the new world of work. And also, over and above that, people need to look at the new organizational and leadership capabilities. What are those? The shift to purpose-driven leadership and adaptive leadership in this uncertainty. So also focusing on building the culture for agile ways of working organizations. So that is very, very important.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a call, 011-883-0702. Khomotso Mopalame is my guest, Head of Product Solutions and Business at SA Board of People Practices. I didn't know that this was the regulatory body for, how shall we say, the HR practitioner in South Africa. Didn't know that. So it's wonderful to know. But tell me, if you are an HR practitioner, what are some of the new understandings given a new workplace reality that you have adopted? And how have you been able to start facilitating the understanding of those new trends for the people that work in your company? How often, Komotso, do HR practitioners actually see the workers in their company? I mean, how often should they be seeing the workers in their companies?
Okay, how often, can you please repeat that? How often should they be doing that?
I suppose it's a bad way to ask the question. How much contact should HR practitioners be having with the workers in any company?
Okay, HR practitioners inspect. I call HR the heart of an organization. So there are people who should be knowledgeable. In fact, HR as a profession is rooted on the four pillars, which is knowledge, ethics, self-regulation, and duty to society. So these pillars themselves, they tell you that an HR practitioner is someone who should be knowledgeable. They should have the foresight, you know, they should lead people forward based on the predictive analysis. And whatever that they do and the information that they bring it into the organization, it should they should have that evidence approach, you know. So they need to keep themselves abreast. And that is the role that we are playing as the professional body, to be in contact with our HR professionals to say, let's work together. Let's have those collaborations and alliances, and that you learn and know what is it that is expected from you. So they need to know what are the new trends, because now, for example, we are talking about the strategic human resource business partners, whereby we say HR should be strategic and HR should be in partnership, in collaboration with other stakeholders. We should not work in silos, because organizations need us as the HR practitioners so that we support them. For example, on the new roles, right now, Aubrey, we are talking about new roles such as, we have transitioned from that transactional HR into strategic HR.
Yeah.
So there are even new roles in the workplace in terms of the work or the functions of the HR and the entire work generally that people are performing, the tasks that people are performing in the organizations. So HR practitioners should be well conversant with what is happening on a daily basis.
Well, give us a call, 011-883-0702. When was the last time you had an encounter with the HR practitioner at your company? What was it like? Do you see value in the presence of the HR practitioner in your company? Yeah. Many people have never met the HR practitioner in their company. I'm, I suppose, in a special position, Komotso, because I had the unfortunate experience of having COVID-19 last year, exactly around this time. And I can tell you right now that the HR team here, led by the head HR practitioner here, were on the ball. My family was looked after. They made sure that psychologically my wife and children were looked after. I was in hospital for 2 weeks, and I don't know how often people experience that kind of service from their HR companies. I just had never seen anything like this before. But is that what HR practitioners in any organizations ought to be doing?
They need to help other employees to develop the strategies, the people practices, the roles and the functions that are required for the future work, the workforce and the workplace itself. Also, they need to ensure that the people take care of their well-being. I mean, I like the example that you've just used now, because this blended workforce now allows people to be flexible, and then really bring a sense of wellness into people. So they need to focus on themselves, their head, heart, and their hands. Also, HR needs to play that active role to shape the future world of work. That is, they reflect on the diverse lens about themselves and the organization. And also, they need to help other practitioners to approach this new normality of work and to position their functions very well in the organization. So every day they need to be engaged. And we are talking about things like mental wellness now. I'm not bringing in a new subject in our conversation, but yep, that is the reality in HR. So the culture of the organization needs to change. And also, with this hybrid work mode, the employers, those in leadership, they also need to develop that sense of trust for employees. That's why they need to understand exactly what their roles are in the organization, but not to have the fear and that mistrust on the employees to say, when they are at home, we are not sure if they are working. If Obrin is not in the office, yeah, or Komoto is not in the office, we are not sure exactly what are they doing. They need to exactly understand the advantages of this, you know, and how to deal with everyday matters of the
I do want to understand how you actually do that between the line manager, the HR practitioner in the organization, and the worker, particularly in a situation where somebody's working from home. How do you manage that process where somebody is not there, right? That person is not at the office, so they can't be, I don't know, micromanaged, as it were, because, you know, they're physically not there. How do you manage that relationship between the line manager and who is used to a particular way of managing somebody, right? And the reality is that, this person is not at work. How does the HR practitioner manage that relationship?
Okay. The HR practitioners need to resolve this dilemma of how firms manage their employees both efficiently and through the innovation. You know, they need to know how to use technology optimally in order to ensure that people are doing what they are supposed to be doing. You give them that support, you give them the resources that they need, and you understand the processes. And this is where we come in as SABPP, SA Board for People Practices, because we were the first to set the national HR standard. So the employees or HR practitioners need to be well-versed with the national HR standards, because we outlined all the elements, we explained them, we defined them, because they bring that sense of alignment, and also they are a guiding tool. This systems model is a guiding tool to the HR departments on how should they go about this in terms of supporting and advising the employer, the line managers, and the employees. So they need to understand the HR standards and the competencies that the HR should be having, you know. So we have that competency model. It is there. We have that system standards model, which is the HR standards. We have 13 of them, whereby they are on three different categories. On the strategic level, whereby when they set the objectives for the organization and how are they going to go about the daily practices, they will get to understand exactly how should they go about that, the process map and everything, and to bring that value, you know, in terms of the value chain in the organization, to manage things such as your talent. Who are the people that you are recruiting? I mean, we are working with different generations now. What are their interests? You know, how do you retain that talent, and how do you keep your employees happy? That's very important.
Let's talk to Sam in Polokwane as I invite more calls about your experiences with the HR practitioner or practitioners in the company that you work with. What do you expect from them? got a few messages coming on social media platforms, Komotso, that I want to read to you about some of the understandings that may be prevalent in certain employees' minds about the role of the HR practitioner in their organization. And I'd like your comments on that. But Sam is in Polokwane. Hi, Sam.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Sam. What's on your mind, brother?
I'd like to ask your guest, how is the HR industry reacting? How are they reacting to the fact that their job is being wiped out by artificial intelligence, like other white-collar professions? Because I work for a company called Palantir Technologies. We've got a software called Gotham. It's mostly used by intelligence agencies and other government departments. So what happens is, like, this software, it can do, like, almost everything. So Google, for example, it uses it to conduct interviews. It can do, like, almost everything that someone is going for a four-year degree. It can do, like, perform, like, more than 100% better. So, for example, in companies, you find that people are being persecuted, for example. They can't report. So this software can do everything. It can scan CVs and search for a better suiting candidate. People can, like, it's sort of just speaking to a human being. Can perform everything better than a human being. People can report things to it at any time, anywhere. You can use it via mobile. You can, like, I'm not really familiar, 100% familiar with the job of HR, but it's working on this software because we're consulting with other people that are doing HR.
So they
teach us how to program the software. So companies are adopting the software. In a day, it can interview more than 1,000 candidates, and it can scan through CV, it can collect data, it can do data analysis and tell you who is better suited to work for this company.
Yep.
It doesn't have emotions. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, people have got bias. They do things driven by their feelings.
Yeah. I get you, Sam. I get you. Let's hear what Komotso has to say. Komotso, the advent of information technology and the technologies connected to that, and the possibility that HR may be taken over by bots. I mean, is that a reality? Mm-hmm. And is HR work that come to that place where technology can actually replace the HR practitioner?
Aubrey, technology will never replace the HR practitioner. I mean, if you look at the critical skills now, and even the international companies now, they are recruiting even from South Africa here. And some of the skills, in those skills that they so need, they are in dire need of, HR is part of it. And at SABPP, we developed the strategy which we call the People Factor Strategy. And if you go to our website, you will see that strategy. And that strategy has a human element. In fact, the acronym that we use there is PEOPLE, whereby we say, technology can be here, and we know that people are fearful that technology will replace people. But the reality is, as much as many jobs will be lost, many more will be created, and HR will always be there. The human element will always be there. So the acronym PEOPLE says we need to position, the first P is positioning HR in the digital era with excellence and evidence-based approach to be online and in touch, partnering and promoting the HR profession. So we are doing this with alliances with other organizations, and also leading on people practices and being ethically centered with good governance. So this caller need not be afraid. The human element will never be replaced by technology. I mean, even if you can manufacture a drone or something, those things still, they need that human element, to set them up. So human beings, HR will always be there. That's why HR is one of the critical skills now, even other organizations like the Netherlands and other countries, they are sourcing that skill from South Africa.
Wow.
It's one of the realities.
Yeah. So Sam speaks also about issues of bias. And then I want to read you this message from Lionel in Johannesburg. Around the issue of the expectations of employees from HR. Yeah. What should employees expect in terms of HR and in the context that I'm going to read you now from Lionel in Johannesburg? He says, "Hi, Aubrey, please ask your guest about the HR practitioners that are merely interested in siding." Oh, I've lost my guest. Can we get her back on the line? But the question that I want to ask her is, what is the expectation? Are you expecting, in the case of a dispute between yourself and the company, that the HR practitioner in your organization take up your side, similar to what a union shop steward would? Yeah. Is the expectation that the HR practitioner is somehow supposed to take up the union shop steward's job? What is the expectation? I'd love to hear from you on 011-883-0702. And this question from Lionel Komotso reads this way. "Hi, Aubrey. Please ask your guest about the HR practitioners that are merely interested in siding with management and do sweet nothing to protect employees. There must be more to their role besides the obvious admin work," says Lionel in Johannesburg. And again, Komotso, I'm asking this question in reference to what Sam spoke about, the idea of bias. In instances of grievances that have been raised by employees, in instances where there is perhaps a stalemate between the organization and the employee, what sort of arbitration roles are HR practitioners expected to play, and how are you then able to stay objective in that situation? I suppose your professionalism needs to kick in, but I think that that's where these kinds of questions are coming from. And how do you respond?
Yeah, the issue of biasness and especially from HR side is very wrong. We condemn it. Earlier on, I mentioned that HR is rooted on the, or is founded on the four pillars, and one of them is ethics. So as an HR practitioner, you need to be ethically centered and to instill that good governance. I mean, many things have gone wrong, even in our country. We know about that. We've been observing that day by day.
Yeah.
And when you look at the root cause of this, it was due to an unethical behavior. So when HR become part of that, really, it is very disappointing. Hence, we say to the employers, register your employees, and I'm specific about HR practitioners, with the professional bodies such as the SABPP, because as they become the members of the professional body, when these things do happen, you are able to report such a misconduct to us, and then we have some national committees, and like the ethics committee, which has the disciplinary committee, and we have those powers to discipline such employees, because that is a no-no in the HR profession. I mean, time has gone whereby HR was seen as just a mere, by the way, profession in organizations, where people had the perception that HR has to do with hiring, firing, and all those things, you know, focusing on the transactional HR. That's not the role of HR. HR should be there as the change masters, as the employee champions, playing that strategic role and business partnering, that is working hand in hand together with the customers. And the customers, I'm referring to both internally and externally. And the internal customers, they entail also your employees, your line managers, You need to be supporting those people and giving them the relevant information, ensuring that that strategic role and approach is very visible in the organization, but not to be biased. And Aubrey, most people and the HR practitioners, they will tell you that they do these things due to the fear of victimization or losing their jobs. That should not be the case. So we are there as the professional body to guide and lead. So the employers and the managers, they should be in contact with us so that we assist them with such challenges.
Friend of mine, Len Moleko, says, H. Aubrey, the HR are witch hunters. They are the Tutula movement of the office. I've experienced this in my previous work life, says Len Moleko. I wonder which work, previous work life, Len. He's a former colleague of mine. So I'm wondering what he's talking about. But is that the idea? I mean, you said something interesting there, Komoto, that the HR practitioner should be on the side of the employee. Is that how we should understand it? Or is the relationship between the employee and the HR practitioner a lot more sophisticated than that?
It's not. In fact, they should be on the side of both the employer and the employee. They are the link, between the employer and the employee, or management and the employee. Earlier on, I spoke about HR business partnering. That's how simply we can put it, to say they are the future, and they should be future and strategically focused. You know, that's the role that they need to be playing as the link between the two. So there shouldn't be any biasness.
Well, what does that mean, future and strategically focused to the future? What does that mean in very basic terms, Komoto? What does that mean to an employee?
It means to the employee that HR should be guiding and leading in the organization. They should know exactly what is expected in organizations. So what are the global trends, and also how can they align the global standards strategically in the organization, whereby we say the employer, they have their own strategy, but HR should have its own strategy that is aligned to the organizational strategy. So as HR sits down and focus and plan for the future, they need to ensure that they make it possible for the organizational objectives to be realized, and also those goals to be reached. So that is the critical role that they need to be playing to ensure business sustainability, and also to ensure that the processes in the organization are effective and well managed, and that there is a value add in the organization. Because now, even when you recruit into the organization, what are the talent that you want to bring in, those individuals, they look at your value proposition. What is it that is in for us in this particular organization, you know? This is the supportive role that HR needs to be playing. So they need to play to ensure that they play their role of the duty to society. And by saying the duty to society, it is whereby now HR supports the organization in terms of everything that they need. What do they need to know? Are their systems in place? Are they aligned with the good governance practices, which are ethically centered? Very important.
It all is very erudite and very, very educated, Komoto. I'm obsessed, by the way, with the idea of simplifying things and making things relatable. Do you sometimes get the sense that HR practitioners are a little too heady sometimes for the people that are supposed to be deriving services from them? In other words, are there challenges of speaking the language of the worker, as it were, so that the worker understands the mandate of the HR worker and the mandate of the employee?
Yeah, sometimes it is like that. That's why they need to be knowledgeable and to develop themselves, and that upskilling that we were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, to say the HR, I will go back to the HR standards, they are there. That should be a guiding tool for them, because we define the functions, the HR value chain, we define it there. We simplify the language there. We give them the process in terms of what should they do. We even train the HR professionals. And moreover, we even audit the HR departments, you know. And our audit is not like a normal audit that the people are used to, because ours is not punitive, but the intention is for our HR departments to improve. So they get difficult sometimes on not knowing how to go about the processes. So let them reach out to us so that we assist them.
Yeah. Here's a question that's coming through about remuneration, committees, salaries, and so forth. This particular listener says, good evening, Bro Ops. Please ask your guest, what is HR saying about transparency in salaries? Or in salary structures in private business. Private companies in South Africa compensate employees based on race, says this particular person. First, is that assertion true? But what is the HR profession's attitude towards issues of transparency around remuneration? I know that a lot of people would be uncomfortable about their salaries being made available or transparently put out there for people to know about in private spaces. I know that the public sector has to do so for certain categories of workers. That's why we know how much the president earns. But what is your attitude as the HR fraternity as far as transparency, as far as salaries are concerned, Komozo?
As far as the salaries are concerned, the HR need to guide them in bringing the reward practices to a fully professional level in support of sound governance.
Yeah.
So there are vastly different underlying principles and beliefs in different organizations in terms of the reward systems, you know, and the transparency, like you were saying. So we need to have our policies very well defined and very clear for everyone, and those need to be communicated to the employees. And also, we need to be consistent with the legislative mandate in terms of how do we approach these issues, such as the remuneration. I mean, we have the public sector, we have the private sector. We know that the workplace is being legislated. However, there are some deviations there and there. So the system standard model that I was talking about, which entails the HR standard, reward and remuneration is one of them. So we do train our HR professionals on those.
Should we be making the different remuneration packages known publicly in the public sector? I mean, the private sector? Should we be?
Not necessarily, but I can say that there's nothing wrong about that, because there has been benchmarking throughout. I mean, the salaries are there. You know, when you want to benchmark, you do your research and you will get all the information that you need in terms of how to go about the salary. So we need to deal with the inconsistencies that are there, which are exacerbated by the variances in the reward practices. You know, there needs to be that fairness. We need to be ethical in terms of how do we deal with our remuneration and reward.
Langa is in Durban. Hi, Langa. Siyaphila Langa, how are you doing, my brother? You've just made me a royalty. You just called me Masang. I thank you. but it's Masang.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel it again, you know, sometimes when it comes with when it comes to the HR practitioner.
Yeah.
Me, now personally, I feel it again, you know, they're a bit biased in the sense that they would most of the time lean toward the interest of the company. Why am I saying that?
Yes.
I'm saying that because of the power disparity that sometimes you find within certain institutions. Or, like I'd go as far as saying, like, in most institutions, because of if, for instance, I'm the owner of the company and then I'm the person that is paying the HR, obviously, the HR would what then go with the interest of the company
instead
of the interest of the employee. Hence, in most companies, you find that the employees would trust the unions more than they trust the HR, of which for me, I feel it's extremely, like it's very sad. It's very, very
sad. Do you feel that at this stage, precisely because HR practitioners are paid by the company, they would gravitate more toward the side of the company than the employee in moments of dispute?
Definitely. Because of obviously the power disparities, because of obviously they're also thinking of their own salaries, because of if maybe I am not to side with my employer, and then obviously I'm also putting my job at risk.
Yeah. Danga, thanks very much for your call. There it is again, Komoto.
Yeah, he was not that very clear, but I think I heard when he said that HR are more on the side of the employer, and also because they have been paid for that.
Yes.
I tend to disagree with that. However, maybe if he says physical examples, you know, one might be in a better position to understand exactly what the problem is. But what I can say is that, like I said, HR is the link between employees and management. So in terms of HR is being paid more or what, that I can disagree with that, because there are policies and there are set brackets, remuneration brackets for everyone in the organization, and they need to adhere to that. So it's very important that the employer designs and implement an appropriate reward strategy which is aligned to the organization culture objectives and the employment value proposition, you know, so that they can achieve a fair balance between the needs of the employer and the employee, so that also they can deliver a fair and equitable reward system and process that is ethical, cost-effective, and sustainable for the organization. So those things, they need to be clearly written down and be communicated to the employees. And another thing, it might be that, I'm just suspecting, because he didn't give us the practical examples, that sometimes it is about the talent, the different skills, that is being rewarded for what they are doing. That is allowed in an organization, and it cannot specifically be HR. So it also depends on that, you know, because when you attract certain talent, certain skills to the organization, also how you reward them should be in accordance with the work that they are doing. That's why we say to the employer, get to know exactly how should you go about your performance management, because we have seen a lot of inconsistencies when coming to performance management or performance appraisals in the organization. And that brings conflicting situations in organizations, because we've seen other employers really not doing justice to employees in terms of that.
Komoto, I need to stop because we've run out of time, but how do people get in touch with you and your organization if they want to continue with this conversation?
Okay. They can contact us via email or call our office. They can send an email to komoto@sabpp.co.za, komoto, KGOMOTSO, at sabpp.co.za, or customerservice@sabpp.co.za. They can also call our office at 011-045-5400.
Komoto Mpalami, thank you very much for your time. Head of Product Solutions and Business at the SABPP.